Yeah, yeah, I just know. Now, what was the sound? I think it's a guy in a jean.
Please take your seats.
What's in the
Good evening and welcome to the Oceano Community Services District Board of Directors meeting for October 8th, 2008. May I have a roll call, please?
President
Hill. Here.
Vice President Brookout.
Here.
Director Dahl.
Here.
Director Dean.
Here.
Director Mann.
Here.
Please join us in the flag salute.
Greeting salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Item 3 is public comment. Any member of the public may address the board on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of the board. The board will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the board...
And I have to say to Pamela, to Bill, and to Bern that it looked like they've been watching Jerry Springer's show because they really did it that way. And it's a shame that is in the way you were treated. We don't appreciate that. I don't know what is the reason for Pamela, Bill, and Bern to be that way. It's about time that they stop all this nonsense. You guys want respect? You guys want to demand respect? Well, give respect.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment?
I think I'm about the oldest person here because I'll be 87, so you won't see me here again, I don't think. But I watched the programs on the television, and I was appalled. Harold Guyton dragged me kicking and screaming into the OIA and into this business. And this was built up for us. And I think that's something you've forgotten. I was appalled because Robert's Rules of Order were not... Harold drilled those into me, and they were not followed. And the people who came up to the podium did not follow them. And I really, really hope you get the idea that you are up there for us, for Oceano. Not for yourselves, not for your petty little comments to other people. And nobody should ever come up here and attack one person of you because you're a board. You're not individuals when you're up there. And you know that. And that's the way you should run the program. And I would like to see you do that in the future. I would like to see you think more of Oceano than of yourselves.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment? Okay, hearing none, go to item number 4, board member items for discussion. Pamela?
I have none at this time.
Bill?
None at this time.
Vern?
Nothing.
Barbara?
I just have a couple of announcements, and I'm pleased to say that on Monday, this last Monday, the entire school kids from Oceano came down to Highway 1 along with our fire department and service clubs who stood on the highway to wait that we can try to finish our business early, hopefully by 10 o'clock. We as directors need to deal with our issues, the important issues that we're dealing with, and not have a sideshow here. And that's what I have to say.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I have no comment at this time. Review and approval of minutes. Do we have the?
No. They'll be available at the next board meeting.
Okay. Thank you. Moving on then to item number 6, reports from the Sheriff South Station. Sergeant, welcome.
Thank you. Sergeant Tony Perry, Oceano Substation, Sheriff's Department.
I'm here on behalf of Commander Haskell, who's out of town attending a special seminar for SWAT equipment. A few things to report as far as during the last month, items of interest, the Sheriff's Department's been investigating. The Sheriff's Department Special Problems Unit continues to employ minor decoys for purposes to try to curb underage drinking and sales to underage minors. On September 25th, a sting operation was conducted in the South County area. 18 establishments were visited and all 18 passed. That's good news that our local businesses are complying with the requirement to sell to only persons of age when it comes to alcohol. So that's good news. Additional items that we've been handling. On September 24th, the Sheriff's Department's narcotics detectives began serving search warrants and made an arrest for possession of controlled substances that netted about 15,000 tablets of the prescription muscle relaxer Soma. The drug, along with a small amount of methamphetamines, were seized during a traffic stop, and subsequent search warrants served in the 700 block of Scenic Circle in Arroyo Grande and the 1300 block of 23rd Street in Oceano. Working with Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents, the drugs had allegedly been brought into the United States via Mexico and destined for sales and distribution on the Central Coast. One person was arrested during the traffic stop, and deputies also seized nine unregistered handguns in that operation. Additional narcotics investigations. We also had a major methamphetamine seizure on September 11th. Sheriff's Department closed an investigation in the South County area after a three-month investigation of major methamphetamine dealing originating out of primarily the Napomo area. The operation started in July. Of those drug seized was approximately $1.9 million. And so that's a major arrest occurring locally here on the Central Coast, and that's, again, good news. The Sheriff's Department on September 18th was tentatively awarded $25 million for expanded jail construction at the main jail facility in San Luis Obispo. We were one of nine counties that were given tentative conditional awards of funding for jail expansion, and we're looking forward to possibly finishing that that funding acquisition and continue moving on with our project. Obviously, the longer we wait, the more money it's going to cost to build that jail facility, and we're hoping to get that going soon. Additionally, October 4th, we also made a in-progress burglary arrest up in the Black Lake area, and a gentleman who had had his house broken into numerous times had a gentleman who had been just released from prison a few days earlier break into his house, and he was caught running out the back door by deputies who were a short way away when the call came in on the burglary in progress. So arrested in that was Darren Blumgren, 40 years of age, out of Santa Maria. Other than that, those are the interesting cases we've had in the last month. Obviously, we have no shortage of those, and there's a lot more, but I don't want to take up too much time. Appreciate your time and diligence on everything that the board does. If anyone has any questions or any issues that you'd like the Sheriff's Department to address, I'd be happy to field those now and do whatever we can for you.
Anybody have any questions?
No, I don't.
Questions?
Okay.
I would just like to comment. Thank you for your excellent work here in the community and the whole county. I mean, it's obvious from what you've read us how active you, the Sheriff's Department, is, and I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, thank you. On behalf of the Sheriff's Department, we appreciate that good feedback. Thank you.
We appreciate all your work for all of us. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Good night.
Okay, moving on to item 7, fire items. The first is 7A, fire consolidation. Patrick?
Mr. President, members of the board, as most people know, in July of this year, the district entered into a joint fire services agreement with the cities of Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach. As a result of that agreement, we received the services of a fire chief, a battalion chief, coordinated training and site committee to come up with a more long-term solution to full-time participation between the three agencies. In August of this year, the Fire Oversight Committee recommended to the three agencies that they consider the report that was developed by that subcommittee. In that report, it's recommended that one of three actions be taken, that the three agencies contract with one primary agency to provide fire services to the other two agencies. That's one alternative. The second alternative is the formation of a joint powers authority between the three agencies to provide joint fire services. The third recommendation is the formation of an independent fire district. That the Fire Oversight Committee asked each agency to review this the report and to come back with recommendations on how to proceed. That recommendation was provided as an attachment to the staff report. The alternatives contained in that attachment only consider the cost of salaries and benefits for full-time personnel. Consolidation of the criteria discussed in that attachment would cost the district an additional $175,000 a year. If this is the final cost impact to the district, it may be difficult for the district to manage to continue in this consolidation effort. However, simply analyzing the impact of costs associated with full-time firefighters does not allow consideration of other cost-saving opportunities, which I believe are available to the district, which may allow us to move forward. In order to effectively evaluate the district's ability to continue in the consolidation effort, the impact of all costs of fire operations must be calculated. This must include capital equipment replacement costs and operational costs such as dispatch costs and administrative support costs where opportunities may exist to save expenditures through consolidation. It should also include a discussion of a potential phased implementation of pay comparability for district firefighters. Another aspect of the recommendation is that cost sharing is based on population and service calls. While at first glance this may seem to be an equitable distribution of costs, it is not the only equitable distribution. I prepared a second attachment that was provided by at the Aurora Grandy City Council meeting by Rick Grinsick, who is here tonight and will probably speak tonight. But basically, the center of that attachment shows that Oceana residents currently pay more per person than either Aurora Grandy or Grover Beach for fire protection. And the bottom, the other method of paying for services through municipal services is from taxes, which and they're primarily property taxes. The majority of fire services are funded through property taxes. In fact, if the third operating alternative of forming a separate fire district is pursued, it is likely that funding would be through property taxes completely for the fire district. Under that scenario, constituents would pay based on the assessed value of their property. And as an alternative method of funding fire consolidation, cost sharing based on property assessed value should be considered. I think that would be advantageous to the Oceana community, and I believe it would be an equitable way to fund fire services in this area. So the recommendation from staff to the board is to direct staff to advise the Fire Oversight Committee. The next meeting is this Friday, to direct staff to tell the Fire Oversight Committee that we want to continue to look at consolidation efforts, that we believe the whole costs need to be considered, where we can look at alternatives to things such as administrative costs, and that we would like to look at other methods of cost sharing, such as using assessed valuation.
First, are there questions on the staff report? Hearing none, is there public comment on this item?
Good evening. My name is Patrick Irie. I'm the president of Local 4403. Is this better?
Yes, thanks.
Oh, okay. My name is Patrick Irie. I'm the president of Local 4403, the labor group that recognizes the full-time firefighters in all three of the communities. We urge the board to move forward with this. We think we owe it to yourselves and the community to take the next step forward to look further into this. Right now, I don't think there's enough information to say yes or no. The union feels this is the best for the community and for us, and we urge you to have staff look forward and not judge the dollars right now. Wait and see what the cost savings are to make a truly informed decision. So, thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment on this item?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, good evening. My name is Rick Grensick, and it's a pleasure to speak with you, and I really appreciate the time this evening. Higher, lower? Okay, thank you. You have been doing with the Fire Oversight Committee is I've been very, very impressed with. One of the things that I mentioned to you that evening, and I will remind you again, is as we dial 911, any of us, think about it, it's kind of like a plumber. You don't need a plumber very often, but when you need a plumber, you need a plumber. You need a specialized person that has some knowledge. When you dial 911 for emergency services, let's call it on the fire side, eventually people get a fire engine in front of their house and they go, wow, the fire guys showed up and it's great, thank you very much, what good service. Well, compared to where you started prior to the time that this cooperative agreement began, your service levels have been vastly improved. So I have to make sure that you understand that you are getting really good value. What I'd like you to do is take a look at this list. I'm going to go and talk about numbers a little bit. Yes, city manager is absolutely correct. You are paying higher than Arroyo Grande, and you are paying higher than Grover Beach. Just to give you an overview of this, what this is a breakdown of all the costs throughout the county for fire protection. It has a pre-consolidation or pre-cooperative agreement back in 2005. It has a current situation of 2008. And it also, at the near the bottom, it's the proposed future costs that are being presented to you tonight. With those numbers, it's kind of like going to Costco. Why do we shop at Costco, if you do? It's because the more people buying, the cheaper the product is. Unfortunately, you happen to have the lowest number of participants sharing that cost, so your costs are a little bit higher. However, one of the things that I've pointed out to the councils before your council, both Arroyo Grande and Grover, is the fact that you are still getting very, very good value for your dollar when you compare it to everyone else in the county. The city I happen to live in, if you notice, it is way, way, way at the top. And they don't even provide paramedic services. Most of the higher cost services, they at least provide paramedics. That usually throws a substantial cost in. But if you start really breaking these numbers down again, compared to most of the time in general service type of communities, fire and or police, sometimes referred to as emergency services, equates to approximately, take that number, you're only paying 14% of your budget for fire department services. If you increase that and you bring that cost down, if you negated the 140 and made it what I would consider a little bit more reasonable, you'd actually only be paying $829 or $29,000, which brings your cost down to $114 per person. Again, very, very good value as compared. It's still within the lower third of the entire county. And I commend you for doing that. However, just like we have budgets in our personal life, apart from the federal budget, that nobody knows what the heck they're doing with that, but I understand that you have a balancing act between the cost or the revenues coming in and what goes out. However, one of the reasons that I'm standing up here before you tonight is please, please understand that you are getting extremely good value. And if you choose not to go this route, I'm going to tell you a personal story. I stood, and I still have the DVD to prove it, I stood in front of my council prior to the time CDF came in and took that contract. And I said, be careful of a bait and switch. Okay, because what they did was a lot of people go, oh, we'll just contract with CDF. Because what they do, it's a very, very good agency. I'm not diminishing CDF in any way, shape, or form. But what they have done consistently is they're trying to figure out how they can provide the best wildland fire protection in the world. And what they do is they're doing it on the backs of smaller communities. If you look at the numbers that Pismo Beach is paying, both in 2000 and 2005, it doesn't even begin to give us good value. So they will give you a little tickle rate and they'll go, gee, you're going to really be great. Now, when CDF people look at this video and they hear me, you know, saying things like that, all I want them to do is stay focused on the fact that, number one, they have very, very good people there. I'm not diminishing the people. But the numbers do not work. So if you think there's going to be an easier answer by contracting with somebody else, please pay attention to what we in Pismo Beach are paying. We are paying by far the highest per capita cost. I mean, even compared to the city of San Luis Obispo, which is a full service, paramedics, you know, all types of things, we're paying $174 per.
Okay, hearing none, I'll bring it to the board for discussion. Pamela?
Yes, we were at the fire committee last night, so we've had a preview of what you're hearing tonight for the first time. And I think all of us here on the board have really made our commitment. We've started with the commitment to the fire consolidation services, and I would like to see that go forward. I would like to entertain these economies of scale, maybe adjusting our administrative fees, but also being wary that we are very low income here, and we're carrying a very heavy load. Our people are carrying a heavy load. What we talked about last night is assessed value and how payment could be made or adjusted to the carrying on the consolidation of the fire by adjusting to assessed value in our particular cities. Oceano having assessed value a lot lower than, say, Grover Beach or Arroyo Grande. It also kind of makes sense because the fire people are the ones that have to protect that value. And we're hoping that maybe we can look at that and find some ways to meet our commitment to fire consolidation. We're talking about increasing pay to parity, but we also have to consider how we're going to do that. We should be making some economies here so that we can come to parity with our pay scale for our firefighters. I personally want to see this go forward, and I would recommend that we ask the general manager to tell the Fire Oversight Committee that on this Friday.
Bill?
Well, I'd like to join with what Pamela's just said. I'd like to thank Rick for bringing us this list. It breaks it down where we can understand the costs. CDF definitely, you know, in Pismo, is, even though they do give a great service, Pismo has the highest per capita in Oceano. We will be paying more than Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, but our fire department, since they've joined with Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach and have been participating, the improvements that we've seen are tremendous, and we just need to move forward.
Right. Mix that back and forth from water fund and sewer fund and that type of thing. So that, you know, what percentage it is of our budget doesn't really, you know, it's not a matter of whether it plays into effect at all. It's, we just have so much money, and that's how much we have. We can't change that, either up or down. And as far as the price per person, what's the question that I'm looking at, you know, I do see that the cost per person is a lot higher in Oceano. But fire departments, and I don't know if this was figured in or not, but fire departments don't just serve residents. They serve businesses as well, and commercial properties, and fight fires on commercial properties, and do paramedic services for people that have instant illnesses and so within businesses. And I think that those should be something that's considered as well. And when we're looking at, a cost, how much it's going to cost if we're going forward with the, with that scenario. But anyway, it is something that we are committed to, that we are going forward, working forward with, and I support the staff's recommendation on this.
Barbara?
Not only the current fire committee, but the previous fire committee had been dealing with this and looking at it and talking about it at great lengths with the fire chiefs from Arroyo Grande and Grover. And one of the things I believe they said that the information that we received is not a detailed and accurate cost analysis, and they were talking about going back and looking at that because dollars play an important role in this. But I do support with us support us going ahead, still dealing, working hopefully towards a fire consolidation. But I even believe our general manager said he felt that we needed more financial information on this, as did the fire chief. So, again, I would just hope that we will tell them how we feel. You know, we're not saying no. Give us some help on figuring out a little bit more of what it costs.
I agree with that. I want to commend all of the firefighters, our Oceana Community Service. The costs obviously are very important to us. As Vern said, as a community services district, we don't have a general fund. We have only the specific enterprise or tax-supported funds, and fire department being one, all of that fund that we get from our portion of property taxes goes to the fire department. But we do believe that there are economies of scale and other economies that can be realized that would allow us to go forward with this. And I'm very committed to seeing us do that. I appreciate the recommendation of staff to further explore and solidify the cost estimates. I think that's a great recommendation, and I can support this very freely. So with that, is there a motion?
I would move that we ask that the general manager go forward with his recommendations for the fire consolidation that he submitted in the staff report.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve the staff report and make those recommendations. May I have a roll call, please? Gina?
Director Dean?
Yes.
Vice President Bookout?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Director Mann?
Yes.
Excuse me, President Hill?
Yes. Moving on then to item 8, utility items. The first is cleaning and inspection of district sewer and water lines. Patrick?
As everyone knows, we've been continuing this resolution for 2 years now. We do have a bid out at the current time for sewer work to repair the sewer, and we just need to continue this resolution until the grant funds are expended. Staff recommends approval.
Okay, is there any public comment on this item? Board discussion or motion?
No, I would move that we continue the emergency for the cleaning and inspection of the district sewer and water lines.
Second.
Okay, it's been, I think I heard Barbara second it first. It's been moved and seconded that we continue the emergency declaration for cleaning and inspection of sewer and water lines. May I have a roll call, please, Gina?
Director Dean?
Yes.
Director Mann?
Yes.
Vice President Bookout?
Yes.
Thank you, President Hill, members of the board. I'd like to give you a brief overview tonight of the sanitation district's efforts in the last years or so, and also give you a little bit of a background and history on where we've come from with the sanitation district. This is a little bit of a roadshow. We've taken this over to Grover Beach as part of the recent effort to take under district jurisdiction one of the major trunk sewers that's been pending since the 1997 annexation agreement. But we also intend to go to the city of Roy Grande and give them a similar briefing. The presentation will be done in two parts tonight. I'll be giving you the background on the sanitation district and some of the projects that we have going on. And then Steve Tanaka is with us tonight. Steve is the author of a previous report that we did on recycled water and all the agencies have asked for a little bit of an update on that as well. I'd like to also introduce Aaron Yonker of our staff. Aaron is an associate civil engineer with us, and Aaron has been instrumental in a lot of the sanitation district's projects, and he put most of the slides together for us. So if I make a mistake, I'll ask Aaron to correct me. So just to give you a little bit of an overview, here on the screen we have the picture of the sanitation district plant, which is right next to the Oceano Airport, and some of the facilities there. And as you know, we have three agencies that comprise the district: City of Arroyo Grande, City of Grover Beach, and your Community Services District. The service area is shown here on the map, the overview of the map. It's basically the three agencies that I mentioned, but it also has a little bit of county territory in there as well. That is kind of a vestigial remains of the original boundaries before some of the expansion by OCSD and the other agencies there. What do we provide? We provide a number of services, primarily the treatment of the wastewater from the three entities that you see. But we also have about 9 miles of trunk sewers that go up into the various communities. Those are four different trunk sewers now. We also have the obligation to look at pre-treating industrial waste that comes to the plant. And we do that by coordinating with various dischargers out there in the community, such as those that might be of an industrial nature or have a high chemical discharge to the sewer. So we're obligated to coordinate the water softener industry, instead of having to take their brine discharge down to San Ynez or other places for discharge. We do have a brine station that accommodates that on site, and so therefore provides a service to that kind of a community. The organization chart here is a little bit dim, but we have our technical staff is roughly about 9 positions. We've typically run about 2 short on that. The EPA staffing recommendations always recommend that we have more people than we actually use down there. So we've run a little bit light on our staff over the years, which has saved the district money, and we think that we still get a lot done, or even more done than typically is happening in a similar plant. We have, as I mentioned, a 3-member board. The county was on the board prior to Grover Beach, but when Grover Beach annexed in 1997, they came on board. We had special state legislation passed, which let the county drop off of our board and Grover come on. Otherwise, you would be having a 5-person board, 3 agencies plus the county plus 1 person elected at large from the district. So at that time, and still, the feeling of the board is it works very well as a 3-person board rather than having 5 members. As you see, here's our current board of directors. It's chaired by your president, Mr. Hill. Tony Farrar from the City of Arroyo Grande is the mayor, and Bill Nichols is a representative from the City of Grover Beach. The district was formed back in 1963 because of problems that were arising in the communities. There was a little bit of a sewering project in Arroyo Grande, but Oceano and Grover Beach depended on the septic systems. And so the board was formed back at that point in time. You only had maybe 15,000 residents across the three agencies. In 2005, it was 38,000, but now it's closer to about 40,000 total people that we serve across the three agencies. 1966, you built the first plant there. And as you can see, it was a 2.5 million gallon a day plant with a trunk sewer and with the ocean outfall, and it cost about $2.5 million. So you can see that you can do the math. It was about $1 a gallon for wastewater treatment along with those trunk sewers and the ocean outfall. Today, it's probably closer to $3 a gallon. So at the time, it was very cost effective for us. Plan in case that levee breaches, we do have extra diesel-powered pumps and so forth that allows us to continue to operate even if there were a flood situation through there. In 1978, it was a major project. We've had, since the original construction, we've had about 5 major expansions or redo of the plant there. 1978, we replaced the outfall line to go out about almost a mile, about 4,000 feet, discharges in 60 feet of water. We also combined it with the Pismo Beach outfall line. So our single outfall line serves both communities. And Pismo Beach owns, they don't own the actual outfall line itself. They own capacity in it. They own about 38% of the capacity of that outfall line. So we do share it. We share the operation and maintenance of it and the cost to do any repairs on it. A lot of these projects were financed by federal grants, too. So those are, for this particular community, are probably not available these days. Loans are, but not grants. But we probably were able to finance 90-some-odd percent of our construction with a federal grant back then. 1979, we continued to expand the facilities there. We constructed a new maintenance building, and we also installed standby power. We experienced quite a number of power failures in that section of Oceano, so it was very imperative that we construct a permanent standby power facility, which we did. 1986 was a major expansion of the plant. Added some major tanks. One of the tanks was an air tank that previously existed there because we were a different kind of process. Instead of constructing a whole brand new tank, we gutted the inside of that tank, knocked out all the concrete that was inside, and made a gigantic final clarifier, giving us some redundancy, some extra capacity at a lot lower cost. In 1990, we added a secondary digester, which is where you process the solids through the plant. And then one of the most recent projects is in 2005, a new chlorine contact chamber. That's a $2.5 million project there. And what that does is it gives us better, more complete disinfection of the wastewater before it hits the outfall line. We also dechlorinate as it goes out the outfall line, so there's no chlorine that's added to the ocean, so it's neutral water when it gets there. The current projects are pretty cool. We have a cogeneration project that is underway. It will be supplemented by a grease to gas. I'll cover that. So the long-range plan is to provide enough redundancy and backup that we can take different major components of the plant out of service for maintenance or repair in cases of emergency and still meet our waste discharge requirements. The energy project is really neat. What we did was we know that as a part of the process, we generate methane gas. Right now, that methane gas is used in one of our boilers, but it's also just flared off to the atmosphere, and it's wasted energy there. So we have provided for an engine generator that will utilize that gas to generate about 80% of the district's power needs. Right now, we have probably $10,000 to $12,000 a month power bill. So you can see the savings from that project that we'll have as once we put that online. We expect it to be under operation early in the spring of next year. It's under construction right now in terms of getting all the plans ready to go out to bid. It's a 150-kilowatt cogen plant. We also will take the waste heat from that process and use that in our digester to heat the digester, which is being done by natural gas now. We're also replacing all the lighting fixtures that are outside the plant with low-energy lighting fixtures. The annual energy savings we project to be $114,000 a year. That's a considerable savings. Our annual energy guarantee from the company that's doing this is about $103,000. You can see that the payoff, plus we'll get rebates from the utilities of about $152,000. So we will be paid off on this project in 7 years. And after 7 years, we'll have $114,000 every year coming back into the district that we don't have to pay out on our power costs. The grease of gas, as you know, restaurants and other types of facilities generate grease from their processes there, from their cooking. What happens is you can take that grease, inject it into our digester, generate a whole lot more gas, which gives us more gas to burn in our generators, which will give us more power in the future, maybe even 30% more power. So it would have a double duty. We would eliminate potential overflows out here in the collection system. We would provide a means for people who want to get rid of that material, a place to go to discharge it to, and we will have the benefit of generating more digester upgrades. President Hill knows, we are rehabilitating digester number 2. You can see that it's covered up in the bottom picture there. They gutted the inside. They replaced a lot of valves and pipes. And the cover over the outside is to control the humidity while they coat both the inside and the outside of that facility. And we expect that to be completed this month. It's just about wrapping up. It's about a $500,000 project. The long-range plan, again, is to provide continue to meet the future needs of our district with meeting our waste discharge requirements and not falling into a fine situation. And we do need redundancies in case we do need to take out a major facility for either a disaster or a rehabilitation or just for operation and maintenance purposes. Again, the picture of the plant overall. You can see the biggest tank here on the left-hand side is the one I was speaking of that in the earthquake it was damaged. Had we taken that out of service, we would immediately be in violation of our discharge requirements. But with the new long-range plan, the facilities that we're providing, we will have some safety there. There's also, as part of the long-range plan, 2 other major facilities planned for, a new secondary digester, secondary clarifier over on the left side of the screen, and a new aeration and blower tank there in the grassy area, which will pretty well build us out for the future needs of the district. It would be enough capacity for the build out of all the 3 agencies. There's a new aeration tank that would be provided, and the new secondary clarifier that would be provided as part of that that process. The Grover Beach trunk sewer, as I mentioned, as you can see there on the screen, it's about 2 miles of trunk sewer. It was part of a 1997 annexation agreement. There were conditions set upon us taking over that trunk sewer. Those have all been met now. In fact, is that recorded here just a couple days ago. They transfer the rights away. So we now own another 2 miles of trunk sewer. And I'm going to turn unless there's some questions here for me, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Tanaka to give you a brief update on the recycling feasibility study.
I tried to talk fast, dude. Receive grant monies from the State Water Recycling Fund, 50 cents on the dollar for the study. So we did get grant assistance to implement the study. Back in 2001, of course, you know, recycled water has always really been kind of an important element of you know, water portfolios for many agencies, but probably not so critical as it is today as we look at all of our various water resources and what we have left to achieve our build-out goals. So that's kind of why we're here tonight, to kind of take a look at this and maybe revisit some of the things that we looked at some 7 years ago as part of this study. So as we move forward, what were the objectives of this particular study? Well, of course, what we looked at is what are the existing and future wastewater demands and therefore recycled water availability that we have from production at the wastewater treatment plant. What are some of the water quality considerations for reuse, say, on turf irrigation or for stream augmentation or groundwater recharge? Is the effluent quality of good enough quality to use for recycling, or do we need to provide further treatment? So these are some of the things that we were taking a look at as part of this study. And then we took a look at what we call a market demand in the area for the various agencies, and actually including outside of the service area boundary, at what opportunities do we have to actually recycle water? You know, how many ball fields, how many parks, how many opportunities do we have for turf irrigation? Can we use it for agricultural reuse? And if so, how much water can we supply to those area farmers? And we took a look, of course, at a regulatory review relative to what are the requirements for providing that recycled water to the various users that would consume or use that water for beneficial reuse. Providing tertiary, what we call tertiary 2.2, the highest quality by California Department of Public Health standards, for contact use for irrigation of, say, ball fields and public facilities. versus lesser uses such as Caltrans right away or more remote type areas that can use secondary effluent for irrigation purposes. What do we need to do at the South County Treatment Plant to achieve that? What do we need to do as far as upgrading that wastewater plant to meet those water quality goals? And then finally, we took a look at the various alternatives and summed up an economic analysis as to the viability of implementing those particular projects. This particular slide, I believe you've just seen prior, it essentially shows the service area. The actual alternatives that we considered as part of this study. As I mentioned before, we looked at both providing secondary and tertiary landscape irrigation. Now, the secondary irrigation component, we looked at that first because that was the alternative that really required us to be able to use the existing wastewater plant quality that you currently have today without additional treatment. And that would allow us to go to median strips on Highway 101, and it would allow us to go to the local cemetery without further treatment of the effluent. Tertiary landscape irrigation, as I just mentioned, we'd be expanding out, looking at the various public park areas, schools, ball fields, and so forth, where we could take that recycled water and use it on irrigated turf. That, of course, has probably some of the highest beneficial use, but what comes with that is additional cost for treatment and more importantly, distribution out to the various reuse sites. We took a look at groundwater recharge. And of course, that's still a consideration today, but one of the things that we were taking a look at is, well, you know, what were the current regulations at that time, you know, then called Department of Health Services, in regards to storing and providing groundwater recharge from a recycled water project. It's certainly a lot more common today than it was back then, and particularly in Southern California, it's very common to do projects such as this. And we also looked at doing some strig augmentation on the Rio Grande Creek. And what we took a look at there was taking a look at actually substituting recycled water into your stream flow in lieu of the water that's coming out of Lopez Dam currently to support habitat. But, of course, what comes with that are water quality concerns, basin plan objectives, from the Regional Water Quality Control Board, and balancing out those beneficial uses of the stream to the actual water quality that we have in our recycled water. And then we also took a look at an industrial use, and this is, I believe now, ConocoPhillips. It was a Tosco refinery at the time. And this was an application of taking a look at conveying recycled water all the way to their facility to use for cooling water. They were going to be able to use a substantial amount of water, so it was worth looking into. However, with that cooling application, they also needed a high degree of treatment. So that was pushing us into then looking at an actual desalination component of the water recycling plant, which also is very expensive. So this is just a quick recycle a lot of our water for beneficial reuse. But this kind of gives you a general rundown of the types or amounts of demand we were looking at. And these numbers are important because they play into the unit cost, just as you were talking about what is your cost per capita for fire service. These same numbers kind of apply to how we looked at how feasible a recycled water project may be for the community. So you've seen this particular slide before, but what I wanted to touch upon here was when we first took a look at the study in 2001, this particular area right here is what we were targeting for a tertiary facility to support a recycled water program. And so we laid out a conceptual plant here for filtration. We had ahead of that coagulation and clarification. We had a reverse osmosis component tacked onto the plant, and then, of course, on-site storage. So those were the things that we were taking a look at back then as a potential use of that area of the plant. One thing that we are also currently doing at this point in time is we are also conducting a desalination feasibility study for potable water here in the community. And that's the very area we're also targeting for a potential desalination plant. So obviously there's some competing interests here with some of the various things that we're talking about. As John had mentioned here, this is, per the long-range plan, the future facilities that will be needed as part of the South County Wastewater Plant's future. So you can see that when you look at the available area and what we're looking at And as we take a look at whether it's a water recycling program for the community, a potable water source via desalination, and then continued wastewater service, we have a lot of uses for this particular area here. So, and I'll just kind of get to the bottom line here and then open it up for questions. This is what we, when we took a look at the cost for water recycling, we took a look at an overall life cycle cost. So we took a look at the capital costs annualized over a 20-year life cycle. We looked at the operation and maintenance costs for the projects, and that included treatment, included distribution, and all the various capital costs associated with getting these projects implemented. And so you can kind of see the various range of capital costs we were looking at. And to implement a fairly small-scale turf irrigation project here in the community, we are looking at in excess of $8,000 per acre foot. Now, and that was back in, keep in mind, these are $2,001, so this was back in study. We certainly, at that point in time, didn't recommend implementing any particular project at that time. But we also didn't close the door on water recycling, and we always feel that it's something that should be considered and looked at. And that's essentially why we're here tonight, to also just bring this back up to let everyone know, you know, what we had done in the past and what we may be looking forward to in the future. So with that, I'll open it up to any questions.
Okay, are there comments for John or Steve from the board? Pamela?
I have a couple of comments on the sanitary district. I'm just thrilled to see that we're utilizing the methane gas. I did tour the plant, and we were using a portion of the gas back then. So I'm thrilled that we're working toward producing less global warming in our own little neighborhood. And I'd like to also ask you to help our own CSD with the lighting requirements. I've looked at our streetlight costs, and it's very expensive to run our streetlights. Some are $300, $400, $800 a month, and maybe I don't understand why there's such a variation, but maybe we need to look and see what you're doing there at the district and see if we can improve what we're doing here, if you have any good suggestions there. But overall, you've run our sanitary district in a most responsible, reasonable way, and I really have to thank you and your staff who have done a lot of this work themselves. You didn't mention that many of your staff are multitasking and multi-talented, and they build a lot of these things that go into the new parts of the system. So I want to thank you.
I was remiss in not mentioning the staff at the plant, because we're acquainted with and work with a number of districts and agencies, and our staff at the plant is most unique, because we have people with electrical skills, mechanical skills, welding skills, mm-hmm. and we do a lot of the things that get shipped out in other plants to subcontractors to fabricate, and we've been able to do a lot of that stuff in-house, which has saved the district a considerable amount of money, and most of our success is due to the high quality staff that we have at the plant.
Mm-hmm. Bill? Agency's here, so we very much appreciate that.
One other question. As far as the sanitation plant is concerned, what do you see as the best use for that land that is there, is in the recycling the water, or in a desal plant, or how, in the conflict, you know, both looking at the same property for both things, it can't be right. done. Can both things be done on the plant site, on the, you know, where within the land boundaries that the plant is, or what are your thoughts on that?
It depends on whether both would be viable or not. I don't believe that we can accommodate both projects with the available property that we have on that particular site that we were targeting. As you know, we just acquired some property from the county at the south end of the plant, where we've been under a permit from them for years, but we have acquired that now. We own that in fee title. So that might be an opportunity to expand to the south and accommodate a similar facility that what we're talking about. A lot of it depends upon whether we have a market or not for either desal or recycled water, and that's going to be determined by the agencies. That was the problem in all the previous studies that showed that although we have the water available at a certain cost to do it, there was no buyers. But I think as we get into more and more strict situations with respect to our water supply, it might become a viable operation at some point. To answer your direct question, we would need to reconfigure some of the processes that are planned for that site and maybe expand to a different area if we were going to do both processes.
Thank you.
More comments or questions? Okay, John, thank you very much. Steve, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, item number 8C has been postponed until the October 22nd meeting, if I understand correctly.
That's correct.
And item number 8D is discussion of the water desalination project. Patrick?
Thank you. In September of 2007, the district entered into an agreement with the cities of Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach to fund a desalination study to determine the feasibility of obtaining potable water from desalination. The cost of the study was sanitation district property. The plant is designed to produce 2,300 acre-feet of water per year. The district would receive 750 acre-feet of that each year. Total capital investment for the district would be $12,744,000. Annual operating cost would be $1,561,000. So the approximate cost of an acre-foot of water amortized over 20 years, these costs amortized over 20 years, would be about $3,300 per acre-foot. There's a second option discussed in the study, referred to as the low-cost option, and basically that option would produce less water. It would be 800 acre-feet total per year, with the district receiving 260 acre-feet at a cost of approximately $4,500 per acre-foot. Another alternative was looked at in the study because there was some concern that the district may not continue in the project, so the cities asked that a cost analysis be done in case the district dropped out and they proceeded on their own. And so that's also included in the study. It's not really of interest to us here tonight. The district presently has entitlement to 1,953 acre-feet of water. We have an entitlement to pump 900 acre-feet of water per year out of groundwater. The approximate cost is about $250 per acre-foot to pump water. We have entitlement to 303 acre-feet from Lopez Dam. The cost this year, if we take all 303 acre-feet, is $1,218 per acre-foot. And the district has an entitlement to 750 acre-feet of water per year from State Water. The cost of state water is relatively fixed. It's about $750,000 a year. So if we get the entire 750 acre-feet, it's $1,000 per acre-foot. However, this year, the year we're currently in, we were only allowed to take 35% of that water, which was 262 acre-feet, which brought the cost up to almost $2,800 per acre-foot for state water. The district for the last 10 years has used between 875 and 950 acre feet per year. We used, this most recent year, we used just a little over 950 acre feet. I think it was 952. We don't have a water master plan. That's we're trying to develop one shortly, but presently we have entitlement to about twice as much water as we actually use. Staff, well, the water and they felt like it was probably too expensive for the district to continue in this process. That's also staff's recommendation. Staff would recommend that since we have already have entitlement to twice as much water as we use, that it's not fiscally responsible to continue in this project.
Okay. Questions on the staff report? Pamela?
No.
No.
Barbara?
No, I just would make a couple of comments from the Water and Sewer Committee. When we looked at what it would add to the water bills for the residents of Oceana. We thought that was high. We thought, yes, they can do this, and it's a great insurance policy, but the premiums are just too high. We just can't afford it. And I believe that was the belief of the general manager also.
That's great. Well, I wanted to add, Steve Tanaka was the principal force behind the study for the Wallace Group, and he is here if anybody has any questions.
Okay. Is there public comment on this item? Dave.
I'm Dave Angelo, and I was I completely agree with staff's recommendation. I was surprised that was going to be this recommendation. There's been talk about selling water to Arroyo Grande possibly, and we probably do have some access water that we could sell to them on a temporary basis. I know the general manager had been directed to negotiate a price on some water with Arroyo Grande, and when this study was proposed, I was all for doing the study because we needed the numbers to so we'd know. Well, now that we've got the numbers, desal is going to cost us $3,300 an acre foot. So that's what the water's worth. So if we sell any water to anybody for any, either permanently or temporarily, that's what the water's worth. Because that's the next, it's time to wash our hands of the desal. And if we, once again, if we want to sell any of our water on a temporary or permanent basis, this should be the figure, $3,300 an acre foot. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment on this item? Okay, hearing none. Board discussion? Oh, I'm sorry, Mary.
Hi, Mary Luciano. I also agree that that we should, support our neighbors in their ventures and their seeking for water in other ways. But I agree that maybe it's time that we did pull away from the desal. But what I wanted to talk about was the water master plan, and it states here that the district water master plan is out of date, but the district presently uses about 950 acre feet of water annually. So is there a draft plan? My understanding, there is a plan, and yes, it is out of date. Maybe we could work on putting that plan, bringing it up to speed, because we do have this information that we spend a substantial amount of money for and other pieces of information that could be brought together. So we do have a nice current a master water plan, but for some reason the year 2033 keeps popping into my brain from a plan someplace. So I just wanted to know if we could possibly work on the water plan in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment on this item? Okay, now hearing none, board discussion, Pamela.
Well, I've looked at the desal plan, and I, in fact, on Zone 3, we were looking at very many options for water, desal, tertiary, and extending the spillway on Lopez Dam. So there are options, but this is a very expensive option for us. This doubles, triples our monthly rate for people here. It would just kill us. It would just kill us, and I just don't think it's an option to continue looking into, at least from our point of view. We are looking at having a lot of water. However, state water is iffy. May work out, may not work out. It's something we're going to have to conserve, but we do have the other option of the Lopez Dam spillway, and it's a lot cheaper way to go. So I'm kind of with the Water and Sewer Committee and saying, yes, we've looked at it. We don't think we want to continue, and let our partners know that that's our feeling.
I'd like to compliment the Wallace Group on the study on the desalination. It did a great job, a lot of great information in here. But like Pamela, desalination in Oceano is too costly for our residents. And this is not, with the amount of water that we currently have, we do not need to do desalination, and I'm not in favor of it.
Fair.
Well, it, you know, I mean, it is obvious in our scenario. If we were sitting here short of water, it'd be a different story. I'm sure there will come a time in the future that this is cheap water, but it's not today. And it's outside of our need, and it's outside of our future need. So I think this is the end of the road for Oceano on this, in my opinion.
I already made my comments regarding this.
Mm-hmm. And I tend to agree with the rest of the board members, obviously, as a member of the Water and Sewer Committee when we looked at this. With that, is there a motion?
I'll make a motion to not participate in the desalination project.
I'll second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to discontinue participation in the desalination project. May I have a roll call, please, Gina?
Vice President Bookout?
Yes.
Director Dean?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Director Mann?
Yes.
President Hill?
Yes. Okay, moving on to item number 9, administrative items. 9A is general manager recruitment. Patrick?
Yeah, thank you. We have entered into an agreement quickly. We'll talk about the interim to hire an interim general manager. That's going to be concluded this evening at the special board meeting conducted a week ago Sunday. It was determined that the administrative assistant would actually do the recruitment of the general manager so that we would not so that the general manager could also be a candidate for the permanent, the interim general manager could be a candidate for the permanent position if he so chose. So Gina Davis has been handling that. I'm going to ask her to give a brief description of what she's done so far.
Right now we have the ad and jobs available. It is on the website for CSDA, and it will be included in their December hard copy magazine that's going out. It's also posted at Vandenberg Air Force Base. We have packets ready to hand out. So far we've had two word of mouth calls asking for the information. We're getting ready to put the ad in the Times Press Recorder, which is Lee Publications. While it's $1,900 to do it through that, it goes actually out into 5 newspapers and is posted on their website as well, so it has a better distribution. We looked at doing it through the other local newspaper. 3 days would have been $3,800. So we chose the other alternative. This will also be coming out in the next edition of Western Cities. That's where we are right now.
Okay, thank you. Is there questions or comment from the board? Or?
Well, these are all tried and true. We've done these before, and these have worked for us.
Right.
That's correct. Okay.
Mm-hmm. We're doing a good job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Vern and Barbara, any comment?
No comment.
Okay. Thank you very much for the update. Item number 9B, board meeting protocol. Patrick?
Thank you. At the last board meeting, there was a discussion of board meeting protocol. President Hill assigned an ad hoc committee to consider implementation of some changes, potential changes to the way board meetings are conducted. Vice President Bookout and Director Dahl sat on that committee. That ad hoc committee met this last Monday, October the 6th, and they came up with a recommended change to the rules of order. I just managed to finish recording those changes today, so I tried to provide those to the board early in the morning. The administrative assistant is passing out in the audience now. Basically, the changes include the following major changes. There are two sentences in paragraph 2.9 that were changed. The second line in paragraph 2.9 will say, it's recommended, will say, public comment will not be received on agenda items that are for reporting only and allows no board action. And the thought there was that a report is just a report, and if somebody's interested in making comments, they can bring it back at the next board meeting and under public comment to discuss that. And then the last sentence in that paragraph would be changed to read, after public comment has been closed, no member of the public shall address the board from the audience on the matter under consideration without first securing permission to do so from the president with the support of the majority of the board or a majority of the board. Paragraph 3 was added completely, and this came from two sources. One, Mr. Edwin, who is the president of the Napomo Community Services District, provided some information that the committee felt was very useful as far as the way that meetings are run at Napomo. They have, believe it or not, they probably have more contentious meetings than we do, especially with the public involvement. And they manage quite well over there from all the reports that I've heard. So incorporating his comments into these procedures, along with the California Special Districts Association has a sample or proposed user's manual, and several sections in that user's manual had procedures for board meetings. So combining those two sources, the committee came up with paragraph 3, and we can go through that item by item if we like once I've finished here. The next major change was the deletion of reference to Robert's Rules of Order. That was one of the things Mr. Wynn recommended. Robert's Rules of Order is extremely complex, and to do it properly, it would be very difficult for the board. It was felt that it would be very difficult for the board to follow Robert's Rules of Order properly. And then the last change was adding paragraph 17, which is a new ethics code. And that's several pages long. So if the committee recommends that this change to the rules of order be approved tonight, and I can answer questions, or I could go through each of the two major paragraphs if the board would like me to.
I'd like you to go through the two major ones. I didn't get this because okay. I don't have a computer at work. It died.
Oh, that's great. Mr. President, would you like me to?
Please go through it. I've not had much of a chance to look at this item.
Yeah. Okay. Basically, the first, the president of the board will introduce agenda items by title only. District staff will present information on agenda items to the board. The president will ask if any board members have questions to clarify what has been presented by staff. This is not a time for deliberation, but for clarification. The president will open the floor for public comment in accordance with paragraph 2.9 above, and that discusses public comment. There will be no immediate response to any public comment, and no questions will be answered at this time. The president will open discussion by board members. Board members will be encouraged to speak no more than once on an item until all other members have had a chance to speak. Nominations do not require a second, but motions do. If a motion is changed, the second must agree with the change, or another second must be made. If a motion receives no second, it dies for lack of a second. Board members will be encouraged to speak no more than once for or against the motion. No disruptive conduct shall be permitted at any board meeting. Persistence in disruptive conduct shall be ground for summary termination by the president of that person's privilege of address. willful disruption of any of the meetings of the Board of Directors shall not be permitted. If the President finds that there is, in fact, willful disruption of any meeting of the Board, he, she may order the disrupting parties out of the room and subsequently conduct the Board's business without them present. The President shall take whatever actions are necessary and appropriate to preserve order and decorum during Board meetings, including public hearings. The President may eject any person or persons making personal, impertinent, or slanderous remarks, refusing to abide by a request from the President, or otherwise disrupting the meeting or hearing. If a Board member believes order is not being maintained or procedures are not being followed, then he, she should raise a point of order, not requiring a second, to the President. If the ruling of the President is not satisfactory to the Director, then it may be appealed to the Board. A majority of the Board will govern and determine the point of order. Board members shall at all times conduct themselves with courtesy to each other, to staff, and to members of the audience present at Board meetings. That's the recommended order of meetings and conduct of meetings.
You indicated there was more.
Yeah, the very last paragraph, paragraph 17, is a code of ethics, which is directly from the California Special Districts Association proposed manual, operations manual. The Board of Directors is committed to providing excellence in legislative leadership that results in the provision of the highest quality services to its constituents and to comply with state laws, including AB 1234, approved in 2006. Copy attached is reference. I apologize, I don't have a copy attached. In order to assist in the governance of the behavior between and among members of the Board of Directors and district staff, the following rules shall be observed. The dignity, style, values, and opinions of each director shall be respected. Responsiveness and attentive listening and communication is encouraged. The needs of the district's constituents should be the priority of the Board of Directors. When a director believes he or she may have a conflict of interest, the legal counsel should be requested to make a determination if one exists or not. The primary responsibility of the Board of Directors is the formulation and evaluation of policy. Routine matters concerning the operational aspects of the district are to be delegated to professional staff members of the district. Directors should commit themselves to emphasizing the positive, avoiding double talk, hidden agendas, gossip, backbiting, and other negative forms of interaction. Directors should commit themselves to focusing on issues and not personalities. The presentation of the opinions of others should be encouraged. Cliques and voting blocks based on personalities rather than issues should be avoided. Differing viewpoints are healthy in the decision-making process. Individuals have the right to disagree with ideas and opinions, but without being disagreeable. Once the Board of Directors takes action, directors should commit to supporting said action and not to create barriers to the implementation of said action. Directors should practice the following procedures. In seeking clarification on informational items, directors may directly approach professional staff members to obtain information needed to supplement, upgrade, or enhance their knowledge to improve legislative decision-making. In handling complaints from residents and property owners of the district, said complaints should be referred directly to the general manager. In handling items related to safety, concerns for safety or hazards should be reported to the general manager or to the district office. Emergency situations should be dealt with immediately by seeking appropriate assistance. In presenting items for discussion at board meetings, see a separate policy, which would be what was in paragraph 3. In seeking clarification for policy-related concerns, especially those involving personnel, legal action, land acquisition and development, finances, and programming, said concerns should be referred directly to the general manager or legal counsel. If approached by district personnel concerning specific district policy, directors should direct inquiries to the appropriate staff supervisor or general manager. The chain of command should be followed. The work of the district is a team effort. All individuals should work together in the collaborative process, assisting each other in conducting the affairs of the district. When responding to constituent requests and concerns, directors should be courteous, responding to individuals in a positive manner, and routing their questions through appropriate channels and to responsible management personnel. Directors should develop a working relationship with the general manager wherein current issues, concerns, and district projects can be discussed comfortably and openly. Directors should function as a part of the whole. Issues should be brought to the attention of the board as a whole rather than to individual members selectively. Directors are responsible for monitoring the district's progress in attaining its goals and objectives while pursuing its mission.
questions on the staff report? Pamela?
I don't have questions at this time.
Phil?
No.
I didn't hear what you said.
I don't have questions at this time. Sorry.
No. I don't have any questions. I just have a comment when we come to that.
Yeah, is there public comment on this item? Jim?
Good evening. My name is Jim Hoover. I reside in the Duna Vista Mobile Home Park. I'm also the local president of CAMRA, which is a nonprofit organization, which we have roughly 10,000 members throughout the state. We currently have approximately 123 members in our local organization here in Duna Vista. I want to agree with Mr. Patrick O'Reilly here. The rules of Roberts are confusing. However, we have used a portion of that throughout our organization through the state, along with our own bylaws. And believe me, we have very orderly meetings. One of the reasons that we have very orderly meetings, we take the pressure off the president, Mr. Hill, in my case, myself, and we designate either a sergeant at arms or a board member to make sure that the meeting is run in a professional, orderly manner. This kills basically two things. It eliminates the pressure from the president. It makes him a non-biased president, and you have a sergeant at arms that takes care of this. By doing it that way, you really don't need any outside professional help, believe me. Like I say, we have 10,000 people that join our organization throughout the state. And by combining Robert's rules and putting in our own bylaws, it really works well. And if I may be so bold, I would invite all of you to come to our meeting the 16th of this month. You're more than welcome to come to our clubhouse and see how we run our meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And if, Mr. President, can we get your name, sir?
Jim Hoover.
Okay.
Jim Hoover.
Thank you.
Oh, they heard you.
Yeah, they heard
you. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, you already heard from Nettie Belk. Now, you may think Robert's Rules of Order are hard to understand, but you just didn't have Harold Guyton thumping on you and teaching you how. And God wish he was here now, because you certainly wouldn't be running the meeting the way you're running it and have been running it the way I've been watching it. And after you learn the Robert's Rules of Order, they aren't difficult to follow. And it's like having a big family that runs well, which is my field of expertise, or having a big family that's all fighting and winding up in juvenile hall. So this is what you sound like, a bunch of bratty kids up here. And I'm really ashamed anymore to say I'm from Oceano, and I love Oceano, and I'm the best street walker you ever saw for Oceano. I'm the best call girl for Oceano. And by golly, you wouldn't hear a lot of that stuff if I was the president of the board. And it all comes back to the president. Whoever's the boss is supposed to be in charge. If you cannot be in charge and you're not effective and you know you're not effective, then please recuse yourself and appoint someone who is effective. But don't let this quarreling and infighting go on. That's terrible. You know, we're being made fun of all over the county. And go to Grover Beach. Go to any of the others and watch their programs. It doesn't sound like us. It doesn't sound like we do it all. I really hope you all listen and listen well, as I had to with Harold. But by golly, we got the senior citizens built. We built OCSD. We built the sheriff's department, and we built a lot of things around here. And we didn't have a lot of money to do it, but we worked together. And it didn't because we all loved each other, but because we loved Oceano. And so we loved Oceano more than we did our own petty little behaviors. And that's what I'm hoping that you'll do. And if you can't run it as a president, and I don't mean to just pick on you, but you are the president, Mr. Hill, and that means you're the big boss. And if you can't be the big boss, please recuse yourself and appoint someone else to take charge. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment?
Hi, Mary Lucy Oceano. Still proud. It seems like a lot of work went into this board protocol, and I really commend you for doing this. This was really an extensive report. There's just a couple things that I would like to point out is that I wasn't real clear on which direction you were going to take for public comment. And so if there could just be a little bit of clarification, because on E it says that a restrained debate, just because someone shows passion doesn't mean they're a loose cannon, and I think that you should be passionate when you're talking about community and things that really excite you. So if somebody shows too much passion for their community, are they going to be gag ordered and escorted out by the sheriffs, which has been brought up? But anyway, and so if we could just have a little bit more clarification in that, I would feel great about that. And then also too is that you do reference the Brown Act. I mean, the Brown Act all through the document. But here on, and I apologize, I too did not get time to read this thing verbatim. It says suggestions on orderly meetings, and it says strike out any language in the bylaws accepting Robert's Rules of Order. That's district's legal counsel's advice. They have no legal standing unless validated by the bylaws. So you do have to go back and make a bylaws change that says that we strike out any reference to or anything that implies that you would be operating under the Brown Act. Thank you.
And I don't find Robert's Rules of Order complicating at all.
Let's have other public comment.
Janet Oceano. If I understand right, Patrick, what he's saying is that he wants to cut for the public to express what we feel. Is that correct, what he's trying to do? I feel that, yes or no? Well, what I wanted to say is we live in a country where we have a freedom of speech, and you guys have to listen to us. We have to say what we feel. Now, I understand Pamela, she goes for no more public comments. Is that correct? Can I please just?
We'll answer, or we'll make comments after the public comment portion is over.
Okay, I'll be waiting.
Is there other public comment at this time? Hearing no other public comment. Patrick, you had additional.
What Ms. Lucy was referring to at the very beginning was paragraph 1.2E at the very first page of the Rules of Order. That's where it talks about restraining debate, and that was there before. It wasn't real clear to me until I found out what she was talking about. That's what she was referring to. There was a good point. I just thought people might have trouble figuring out where she was, what she was referring to.
Okay. Now I have a question. I did not think we referred to Robert's Rules of Order anywhere in our Rules of Order.
The existing rules do say that in cases not covered by the rules, we are covered by Robert's Rules of Order. It's not in this revised edition. It's in the last paragraph of the existing Rules of Order.
Okay.
Yeah. So this change would eliminate that right. Reference.
Just so everybody know, we never had it before. It was never used here, at least not recently, until these rules were adopted in February of this year. and they were included at the recommendation of district council. It's the first time we've had them recently. But, you know, maybe 15 years ago they had them, but we haven't had them recently.
Okay. Comments then from the board. Pamela?
Okay. I feel kind of like I'm not quite prepared for this. I did read all of the backup that we had. I think the really helpful part of this was Mr. Wynn's suggestions on orderly meetings. Mm-hmm. And as he says, orderly meetings follow simple rules, and you work your way through them, and you have the rules as we set out here for the meetings. Using this is 3.1. Is that mm-hmm. correct?
Well, paragraph three. That whole
paragraph three.
Right.
And following those succinctly. He is one who has to be the chairman for the Nipahoma CSD. And he says being a chairman is always a work in progress. I'm sure it is something you have to be thinking on your feet. You have to decide what to do on a minute's notice. And it's something you could go back and quarterback yourself and say, I should have done this, I should have done that. But perhaps following these rules that we're adding here would be a help. And if we all abide by them, it would make things flow a lot smoother. Our problem has been that we've allowed other extraneous things to creep in during each discussion of the agenda item, and we haven't followed properly along. This does not mean that we're going to curb public speaking at the podium. It is the right of everyone to speak, and they can say, as to an agenda item, they can speak to what they need to say at the agenda item. As to other items that affect the district, they can speak before and after in public comment. So that part isn't changing. I think it is a good thing also to use the special district's rules and codes of ethics. I don't think that hurts at all to be a reminder. And it's probably something all of us should read before every meeting. So I like very much what the committee put together. I think I would support what they have put here.
Bill?
In the committee, we used our existing rules of orders. We looked at the California Special District Association rules of orders, and then the NAPOMO, Mike Wynn's, and I think we've come across with some
boy.
Good points here, which have presented in the paper here, and I stand by it.
Vern?
Yeah, basically, this was not, you know, it's not new stuff here. This is all, you know, a well-run meeting is all stuff that's available for in training, and we all have had the opportunity, and many of us have taken this training, you know, through the CSDA and so, but what we've had, you know, it was interesting to see the one attack we had again this evening over this. And what our history has been is that we've been here and we've had one general manager driven away, another one. There's been the, you know, other problems going on, and we've got to get a hold on it somehow. And we tried first to do this in looking at with what the general manager had to do in his evaluation, you know, had to put up with. And this was the only way we felt we could do it, is to try to get some kind of organized control of the meetings. And this is not an attempt to remove public comment, but actually what it will accomplish is give the public more input, because their input will come at a time before the board discusses it. And therefore, their input will be part of what the board has available to them in their discussion. So that's the attempt here, is to get control, to stop the attacks that have been going on. And
and stop the cost that is, you know, the massive amount of cost it is to the community for these high turnovers that we've had. And that's why we've had to do this.
Barbara.
There are a couple of items that I don't agree with that have been stated, but I will let that go. There are a couple of areas in this. One, the 2.9, where it says public comment will not be received on agenda items that are for reporting only and allows no board action. Well, if we're giving a report and the public's got some thoughts on it, I think they should be allowed to tell us that, whether we're voting on it or not. And my other big disagreement is I don't like us getting rid of the Robert Rules of Orders when we need them. I know that a lot of work went into this. And I know I got mine this morning, but I know a couple of you didn't get it till probably when we sat down here tonight. And I don't think it's fair to ask for a vote on this tonight, but whatever will be, will be. I would just as soon be able to look at this for 2 weeks and bring it back. But again, whatever the board decides to do, I will follow once it's voted on what the board decides. And again, the rules have been changed twice this year already anyway, so whatever.
I'm also concerned that the public might be able to comment or ask for clarification on reports that are made at the district. So I would hope that the rule could be modified for that. I'm a little bit concerned with Rule 3.6 that says summary termination by the president of a person's privilege of address, and I'm concerned with the legal ramifications of that, whether we can quote unquote terminate someone's right of address. Is that on the particular matter at hand, or is that on all future matters? The rule's unclear to me. So I guess I would ask for clarification of that. I was impressed with Jim Hoover's comment that possibly the position, we have two board officer positions right now, president and vice president, that the provision of a sergeant-at-arms position would be one where, while the president's attention is focused on the, I guess, the business at hand, it might be a good idea to have another member watch the conduct of the meeting, if you will. I thought that was an excellent suggestion. So I would, I tend to join Barbara's opinion on this, that I would receive the input from the ad hoc committee with my thanks for your efforts to do that, and consider the possibly bringing this back in 2 weeks with some additional clarification on 3.6, and also possibly revising the discussion of board member officers to include a sergeant at arms. That would be my recommendation.
May I ask the general manager a question?
Please.
Mr. O'Reilly, mm-hmm. Can it be, can you look up, because I'm not sure where to tell you or ask you to look. If a meeting is totally out of order, cannot the president say the meeting's over?
Not under our rules. That may be allowed under Robert's Rules of Order, and okay. I'm not that familiar with that.
Okay. I think I've seen it done at some. Yeah. I've on seeing some meetings that happened, but I just wondered if it's in our bylaws or.
It's not prohibited under any California statute. I believe under Robert's Rules of Orders, it is permitted.
Okay.
Therefore. I guess technically it would be permitted under the current rules as they stand this moment.
with Robert's rules.
With Robert's rules. And I'd like to make a couple of comments, not suggestions or recommendations, yeah, but just a couple of comments. The first was in response to the concern on 3.6. The persistence and disruptive conduct shall be ground for summary termination by the president of that person's privilege of address. The way I read that is that it would be a summary termination of their current ability to address the board. I think there's some First Amendment problems by, you know, summarily terminating their right to ever address the board or the public again. So that's how I read that, and I think that's how it would be construed by most reasonable minds. A couple of comments about the rules as proposed to be amended. There's been a couple of recommendations regarding Robert's Rules of Orders, and I think I can safely say that when we suggested that we include that provision in the Rules of Order this year, we did so because it is kind of a catch-all for all of those things that aren't addressed specifically in the Rules of Order. Robert's Rules of Order, it has like 77, 78 sections right now. I think it is very clear on the things that we do, you know, the practices that we utilize at each meeting. Robert's Rules of Order are very clear, and much of Robert's Rules of Orders are very obscure and tough to understand, but at least it has some sort of catch-all in case we come up against a problem that isn't specifically addressed in the Rules of Order. So as far as deleting Robert's Rules of Order, that is up to the board, obviously, but I do believe that there is some value in keeping it or some other form of rule of order that works as a catch-all for those that aren't specifically addressed in our rules of order. And the last section, the last thing I wanted to talk about, which I was kind of hoping to see in here and I didn't, but the ad hoc committee or the board as a whole might want to consider a provision about the order, the timelines, and in the procedures for amending the rules of order themselves. That was at issue in March and April, again, in the most recent revision. And I think it would be nice to have some sort of standard guidelines that the board can look at each time they want to amend the rules, just if for nothing else, consistency's sake, and so the public is aware of what's going on.
Okay. Are there questions for council? Or?
Mike, did you read Mike Wynn's comments?
I got to tell you, I received this afternoon.
Okay.
And so I have not gone through everything.
Okay.
But
I wanted to see what you had to say about what he said about Robert's Rules of Order and how it was used in their particular CSD.
And I would have to look a little closer at his comments. You know, one thing I do hold steadfast about is I was a parliamentarian in high school. I think there is a lot of credence to Robert's Rules of Order, and those sections that, like I said, are utilized in the normal day-to-day or bi-weekly meetings, they are pretty clear, but I think there are many provisions in Robert's Rules of Orders that are very tough to interpret and tough to connect with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, understandably, kind of deleting it is in some cases in the best interest of the district. We don't have real thorough rules of order. I mean, we're looking at 18 sections here, and we sure as the sun will come up tomorrow, we will face a time when we face a situation and go, it's not really addressed here. How do we proceed? And that's where I think, you know, some form of boilerplate rules of order is nice to be able to fall back on.
I have another question then, and I don't know if either of you knows that, about the California Special Districts Association. Do they use Robert's Rules of Order as a fallback?
I don't know.
They used to.
Yeah, you know, one thing, Mike Wynn has agreed to come address the board if you wanted that to happen. He would be glad to discuss his rationale and stuff with you. Another thought, if we wanted to incorporate Robert's Rules, it would probably be best to have a specific copy and say, you know, the Roberts rules attached as per or provided as attachment one, so that, you know, somebody in the audience who got the most recent rules last night is not trying to run the meeting, you know, and then if they're changed later, then the board could look to change them. That was one of his big concerns, was that there were so many different versions of Roberts Rules of Order that you could have conflicting requirements in them.
Isn't there other rules of order that are less complicated that a lot of agencies use as well? From what that's what I've also heard.
I believe there is. I cannot tell you what they are. I've never seen them, but I've.
And so maybe what should happen here is we can adopt these as they've been revised, and then go back to another standing committee or ad hoc and look at adding something to it on how to amend the rules of order, and at that time look at what set of rules of order to fall back on we should use.
Mr. President, I would think maybe we should send this back to this ad hoc committee for them to finish the job and get the other things that we need to look at, and also working with legal counsel on it, as opposed to adopting this now and then coming back and changing it again in another month.
Is there a consensus of opinion how to proceed, Pamela?
I hate to rush to judgment on this, but I hate to leave this undone too, and I'd like to. Why can't we try running the meetings this way next time? Not pass it right now, but look at the things that are here and use that as a trial to run the meetings as they're set forward here. Would that be something that might be amenable? And then we'll just bring it back at the next meeting. But with these kinds of things in mind, to kind of look forward to using these in our next meeting also, but to actually adopt them perhaps at the next meeting, because I think there are some questions still out there. But I'd like to see these instituted as soon as possible and at least get started on trying to do the right thing here with how to run the meetings and the ethics involved here. We need to do this for the good of the community. I feel that it's as soon as possible. I hate to send this back to the ad hoc, but we do have questions, and I have questions on that Roberts Rules of Order. I'm not clear which way we should go with that one, and I need to think about it, and I haven't had a chance to really look at this a lot.
I have a question for my fellow board member. If we said, well, we'll try to do this, then are we going to say on that 2.9, the one thing I was questioning about the public's right to talk about an agenda item or a report? 2.9 and the change that they wanted to add.
I'm talking mostly about meeting protocol. That's what I'm looking at.
Board meeting protocol.
Board meeting protocol and ethics portion.
Okay.
This other one, I think, can be discussed. But board meeting protocol and that kind of thing.
Starting on 3.
Yeah.
In other words, yeah.
Just try a run through of it and see if it works. Then we can also have the ad hoc committee look at sergeant at arms. I don't think I would prefer to be a sergeant at arms ever.
I thought that was what we had a lawyer for.
I think I would decline that particular task. So I'm not I don't like that particularly. I think there are other ways to do it, and perhaps it's take a short break or something like that, rather than, and maybe if it gets too disruptive, you call the sheriff. We have the sheriff right next door. He can come.
You got to throw a punch first.
No, you've been patient.
I think it'd be good to bring this back to an ad hoc committee. I would also possibly like to get Mike Wynn here, maybe at the next board meeting, and have him explain a little bit how Napoma does theirs and look over Napoma's a little bit more.
Okay, it sounds to me like the consensus is that we'd like to try implementing these and send it back to the ad hoc committee for further consideration. I will endeavor to conduct the meetings according with the recommended protocol. I will choose to allow public comment on items that are for reporting only in the interim. So with that, I'll charge the ad hoc committee again to revisit the specific issues.
One last comment. Maybe we could ask if Mike Nguyen would want to join us in the ad hoc as well.
Okay. Yeah, I'll call.
Okay. Moving on then to item number 10, which is an executive session. Patrick?
Mr. President, we have several executive sessions. I'd recommend that we delay, you know, realign the agenda to handle them at the end and take care of the other open items first.
Okay. Moving on then to item number 11, which is report of district representatives. I attended the Water and Sewer Committee. I think that business has all been brought to the board. We had a special board meeting to consider the assignment of a interim general manager and to outline our process for general manager recruitment. I also attended the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District meeting. Some of that material was presented by District General Manager Wallace. That included the acquisition of the Grover trunk line sewer permanently into the district, payments that were made on the digester number 2 ongoing repairs. There were a couple of those. The property at the airport to be transferred to the district was not yet finalized during that meeting. District Manager Wallace indicated that that may have already occurred, so I'll be looking for an update on that. Also, we passed the fat soils and grease ordinance by just title only, and that'll come back to the board for final consideration.
Mr. Okay. President.
It's a little bit disruptive, please, if we could have order.
I can't hear him either.
Okay, Bill.
Just about everything has been covered tonight. We did the special board meeting, which you reported on, ad hoc committee, which we just talked about, fire committee we talked about earlier, and that's it.
Okay, Vern.
Yeah, it's, you know, again, special board meeting has been covered. The ad hoc committee report was here, so there's nothing else.
Okay, Pamela?
Ditto.
Barbara?
Well, we talked about the water and sewer meeting that we had. The only thing I have to say about the special board meeting on Sunday, September 28th, I personally don't like us having meetings on Sundays.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are there comments on the staff report? Hearing none. Moving on, item 12, general manager items for discussion.
I have nothing.
General board discussion, Pamela?
I know that this is Patrick's last meeting with us, and I want to thank him for being our general manager for the past year and a month and a half. Mm-hmm. And I think we've made progress in what we were trying to do. I know there's a long list. I started making a list of the things that we've been working on and that we have accomplished. And it might be good to say some of those things. So I'll just go through them real quickly. I'm not going to take a lot of time. But some of the things we did, and Patrick did, this was him.
He got rid of the at-will status of our employees. We now have permanent employees. He instituted 5% salary steps for employees. He revised the job description for the administrative assistant. He reconciled and audited and finally got the 2006-2007 budgets together, proposed new accounting systems, and he's proposing implementing and instituting long-range planning for reserves. He advanced the codification of ordinances. Those are coming in October 13th, the first codification after 30 years of this district happening. He advanced the fire consolidation, and we have a Spanish-speaking employee at the front counter. So those are just a few of the things, plus advancing our goals. So I want to thank you for that.
Thank you.
I, too, would like to thank you for all the accomplishments that you've done. You've done an outstanding job for our district, and highly appreciate it. We have moved quite forward with your leadership.
Thank you.
I would thank Patrick for his positive contributions to the district. One item, I think, to perhaps a correction, Pamela, the Spanish-speaking employee was, this current one was hired by Patrick, but we have had Spanish-speaking employees since Mitch Cooney was the manager here. He was the first to hire a Spanish-speaking employee in the district for customer service.
Yeah, she left.
Barbara?
I wish I would have remembered to say this at the first director's comment when we had more people here. But for those that are watching us on television also, I hope that they would have taken advantage of coming to the candidates forum tomorrow night, which is Thursday, October the 9th. And I believe it's being put on by the Oceano Improvement Association.
Yeah. I just want to add to the thanks and on behalf of the board, on behalf of the community, for what you've done for the community. Mm-hmm. You've proven yourself to be quite capable, and to myself, to your former, to Roy Granger, who formerly worked, and to the sanitation district, or to the lost my
Harbor District.
The Harbor District, where you're going, thank you. Being the top of the list over there, and that's quite an accomplishment, as well as what you've accomplished for us. And they get an excellent person. We do lose out here by losing you, but you know, it's something that we're going to have to deal with. And And I want to thank you for the continued effort to make the transition as smooth and as easy on us as possible. You've put in a lot of extra effort in making sure that we lose as little time as possible in the direction that we've been headed here. So again, thank you. Thank you for the job you've done. Thank you for who you are.
Thank you, Mark.
Okay, moving on, item number 14 is consideration of the warrants.
Again, I apologize. We had an employee out most of the week, so we didn't get the warrants out until this afternoon. The warrants are before you now. If you have any questions, we'd be glad to answer them. I said we.
Got everything in here right?
Pardon?
Are they all right, Gina?
The only thing I really didn't have time to double check with each of you is if I have all your committee meetings down. If I've missed anything, just let me know.
Has the public had a chance to look at these, or is there copies available?
Kirk and Seamus, even though Mr. Seamus has said that's not necessary, but I will recuse myself from that.
Okay, then, do we have a motion then?
I move that we pay all the warrants excluding the Kirk and Seamus warrant.
I'd second that.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Passes unanimously.
I move that we pay Kirk and Seamus invoice.
I second that.
It's been moved and seconded to pay the Kirk and Seamus invoice. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? And one recused. Passes 4-0 with one recused. Are there written communications? We'll take that out of order.
There's no written communication tonight.
Okay. With that, then, we'll go back to item number 10, which is the executive session. Patrick?
Yeah, I'd ask District Council to go through the closed session items.
Mr. President, members of the board, we have four items tonight to consider in the executive session. We have a closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.8 to grant authority regarding terms. The property involved is an interest in the district's water entitlement. The person or persons with whom the agency negotiator may negotiate is the authorized agent for the city of Arroyo Grande. We also have a closed session regarding public employment. A closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 54957B1 to consider the appointment or employment of a public employee. The position under consideration is interim general manager. We have a closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6 sub A to meet with the district's designated representative to discuss and provide direction to the representative regarding negotiations over the salary, salary schedules, or other compensation paid to an unrepresented employee. The district's designated representative is General Manager Patrick O'Reilly. Finally, we have a closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6 to meet and confer with the district's designated representative regarding the compensation paid to its represented employees. The district's designated representative is Patrick O'Reilly.
Okay, thank you.
I have no problems with that.
Okay. Mr. Walsh, would you come forward, please?
Pleased to introduce Kevin Walsh, who's been agreed to come aboard as the interim general manager. Welcome, Kevin.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President,
Mr. Walsh, this is a matter of background. Retired as general manager of the Goleta Water District on October the 1st after serving there as 11 years. He served as the general manager of two other public agencies prior to that, as well as a district engineer for three or four public agencies. He has extensive experience in public agency management at very senior levels, and the district is indeed lucky to get him here. He lives in San Ynez, and the details of the contract are available for the public if they're interested.
Mm-hmm. And that's available in the front office?
That's correct.
After the opening of business tomorrow, I believe?
Yes.
Okay.
And he may want to say something.
Yes, please.
Well, it was just, I noticed you're signing your copy. We'll make two originals here, Mr. President. I'll sign mine. And if you want to do the exchanging, Counselor, thank you. Well, I'm very pleased to be here. I appreciate the unanimity on the board and in my appointment. And I was glad to be able to come to this first meeting here tonight. You covered a lot of ground. I think you covered a lot of the things that the district is involved in, so I was glad to see that, and we'll have more to do in the closed session. I hope to make a very positive contribution to the community for my duration here, however long that might be. And it's my intent to make the staff a success, and if they're a success, I know the board will be successful. And if the board's a success, then the community's going to get effective and efficient services delivered to them. I always happy to meet with any member of the community at any point in time. So if you want to talk to me, that'd be fine. I'll be in the office starting tomorrow and some next week. I do want to mention, too, for those that are here, I grew up in this county, was born in this county, attended schools in this county, so it's not unfair. Thank you for that exhortation. One of my foibles is going a little too fast.
Actually,
thank
Mr. Walsh,
you very much.
I need to get that.
So we have the contract copies, and we need an attestation. Okay, we've itemized the closed session items. Is there public comment on any of the closed session items? Dave?
I just want to reiterate the number. There really shouldn't be any negotiation for the price of the water for Roy Grandy. So, you know, supply and demand, we have it, they need it. $3,300, that's what it should be.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment? Okay, hearing none. With that, then, we'll adjourn to executive session. Okay, we're reconvening after executive session, and I'll ask District Council to provide a summary.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. In the closed session called pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.8 to grant authority regarding terms. The board did give instruction and direction to the authorized agent or the agency negotiator to get back to the authorized agent of City of Arroyo Grande to discuss selling of water rights. As to the closed session called pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6 sub A, to meet with the district's designated representative to discuss and provide direction to the representative regarding negotiations over the salary schedules, or other compensations paid to an unrepresented employee, and in regard to Government Code Section 54957.6 for its represented employees, the board has given clear direction to the district's designated representative for the meeting tomorrow.